It's time for another episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur.
New tool. It's called the internet.
Yeah, they just invented it, okay. Right?
Yeah, they just invented it. And there's this amazing page on the internet called Google.
Right.
And I know I'm being a little facetious here, but I'm being serious. Because there's so much learning you can do by observing what others are doing.
Good point.
So what I tell people, and no matter what you do, there's somebody marketing it effectively in social media.
Right, sure.
Whether you're a lawyer, an accountant, a doctor, you run a facial clinic, you have a gym, you have an F45 franchise, you're a direct seller and you're selling
right.
One of a numerous type of things, the first thing I advise you to do is to go to Google and search.
Find somebody who's doing what you're looking to do.
Find someone that has it, like, look, Instagram, great Instagram. I mean, again, I'm not giving you the exact thing. There's a million things you can search. It costs you nothing but time.
Right.
You know, and you can refine your searches, but great Instagram pages. Retailers who do a great job on Instagram. Accounting firms that do a great job on Facebook or on LinkedIn. You know, whatever it is, or make it more generic. Accounting firms that do a great job in social media. And what you're going to – now, remember, just like, you know, in politics,
right.
You know, that you have to learn – I call it learn to discern. Some things aren't real. Some things are fake news. Some things are bad sources. You have to learn to see where you're coming from, who might have commented. Are there people that are well-known that, you know, that have said it's a good tool? You know, again, be a little bit self-aware. Don't just read something and say this is the gospel.
Right.
You know, but read multiple posts. And obviously, if you find three posts that say a certain practice is great for your industry, there's a good bet that you're on the right track.
Right, so learn and emulate. Yeah, it makes sense. You know, have your...
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work. And they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hey everyone, this is Ted Rubin. I'm the CMO of Fortify. I'm a speaker, author, and I like to think of myself as a provocateur, creating a time and a place for people to think and express their opinions.
I've been reading a lot of your stuff online and the newsletters I've been getting from you. You write some real, let's call it thought-provoking things, at least from my standpoint.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying.
Yeah. So maybe you want to go back a little bit and we can talk about, you know, kind of where you grew up. And we both went to Cornell, but what your background is and then kind of how you got into what you're doing. And then maybe you can teach me more for both the listeners and myself about social marketing strategy. I love Fortify. I looked at it. I was fascinated with all that it does and the app and everything. We talk about that as well. So you want to just go back to where you grew up and what your background is and so forth?
Sure. I grew up in Oceanside, Long Island, which is the South Shore of Long Island.
Sure.
A couple of towns in from Long Beach. I spent most of my summers in Long Beach and Lido Beach.
Okay.
With my family. I grew up in a real, you know, middle class neighborhood. Parents were first generation. They moved out from Brooklyn. I grew up in one house my whole life in what was a real neighborhood. And, you know, I think they still exist today. They're a little bit less so. We had sidewalks. We had a lot of kids. It was one of these new communities. And it was a great childhood. You know, we went out and played every day. You know, every night after, come home, do your homework, go out and play. Weekends, you know, disappear for like the whole day until you knew it was time to go home, or your friend's mom yelled out her door, "Ted, your mom just called. You gotta get home."
Right.
So, you know, and you know, like I remember a lot of days when I got a little bit older and kind of got past that point. you know, like when friends weren't around, I just got on my bike, I rode to the park, and I found stuff to do. So, you know, that was great. I also grew up, you know, playing sports like a lot of us did. And I was very fortunate to build or to have a coach who I built a lifelong relationship with. And, you know, things were a little bit different back then. Coaches could have you over their house. You could work out in their basement without, you know, talk of something weird going on.
Right.
My coach, we built half his backyard and the fence around his house and laid groundwork and did gardening. And nobody accused him of child labor. They
right.
realized what he was actually doing.
Yeah.
Was he was building a team. He was building young men in to grow into good men, and he taught us how to work together on things that weren't necessarily the most fun, like our sport or a game or something we were doing.
Right.
And I was fortunate also that my parents encouraged it. My mom was a school teacher in the same school district. She wrote the my coach still has the letter he wrote her when I graduated, thanking him for everything he taught me. Well beyond, you know, wrestling.
Sure.
And I'm fortunate that him and his wife are now like second parents to me. And now that both my parents are gone, they're kind of like primary parents. I'm leaving next week to go visit them for my second visit of the year. I go twice a year to visit them. Once in the summer, I try to go once in the winter. They moved and retired to the mountains outside of Phoenix to a town called Pine. And, you know, when we're out, my coach at 77 years old still does search and rescue. He's the chief safety officer on the search and rescue squad. And,
yeah.
you know, we go rappelling, we go hiking. But more importantly, I was just taught so much by him about, and by my dad. I have to give both my parents give them credit about, you know, doing for others without expectation of anything directly in return. About,
sure.
you know, about never giving up. My coach used to have a saying, you know, the expression, it's not over till it's over.
Right.
And my coach would always quote that and talk about it. And there was always one wise guy on the team every year who'd raise his hand, you know, usually a freshman who didn't know better. And he'd say, "Your coach, well, what, you know, what happens when, you know, what happens when you die?" And he'd say, "Well, it's not over then either, because your legacy lives on."
Right.
And you know, I give him credit. You know, I know you watched the video about my daughters.
Yeah.
And I went through a brutal fight to keep them in my life. It goes, that's back when they were 8 and 10. Now they're 20, turning 23 and 25. And it's still a challenge.
Sure.
But I credit a lot of the never give up attitude to what I learned from him.
Yeah.
You know, that you know, even if a match is, like he'd say, it doesn't matter if there's always another match. There's always another year. There's always another something. And it kind of goes into something else you might have seen that I post a lot is no let up, which is just an attitude about life that there's no let up in life. And,
right.
and that isn't like, not from the point where, oh my God, you always have to be working. It's that there's no let up in that you've got to be working. You've got to be thinking about your family. You have
right.
friends that might have issues. Like, you know, there's another quote that I love that I didn't write that's on my Twitter handle and a few other places. Life's not about waiting for the storm to pass. It's about learning to dance in the rain.
Absolutely.
Is attributed to Unknown. But the point of it is that if you wait for everything to be perfect, it's never going to be.
Yeah, you'll reach death. That'll be the end.
Right. And again, there's no let up.
Right.
Nothing ever becomes that perfect. I want it to be like this so I can relax and sit back. And you've got to stay on it. And
right.
Like I said, it could be for you. It could be for a member of your family. And look, a part of that is also being the kind of person that cares about other people. Certainly there are people that don't. But again, that's their choice.
Right. But whether it's business or relationships, I mean, there's no point at which you're entitled or you put your feet up and you're like, I got here. It's always a process, you know, and that's what makes life.
It's always a process. It's never what you expected it to be when you get there. There's always something else you have to think about. I mean, especially being a parent. I mean, you know, there's always things that change, that go, that happen. And for me, you know, like I've also reinvented myself probably four or five times over my lifetime. You know, from where I thought I was, what I was going to do after college or how I was going to be successful, to being successful and then losing it and then doing it again and then having another crisis and then, you know, having you again. I like to say that I tell people that I'm riding this wave into shore because I'm tired of swimming back out.
Right. No, I you know, it's funny, the things you say about your coach and your mentoring relationship. We've become so jaded and so protective of our children and all the bad stuff. There are still very good people, well-intended people out there that are helping young people find their way in life, because that's kind of how we do it from generation to generation. But it's the people that...
I want to add to that. There's way more than just a few.
Yeah,
you know, it's the minority that ruined it for the majority.
Right. Wasn't that true of everything? It gets sensationalized, and it's really just a small group, but it seems like it's everybody.
And, you know, and it's a different world today. Like, you know, people, like, so when my girls were growing up, you know, I used to let them, I lived just half a mile north of town.
Okay.
And I would let them walk to town. Just, you know, at a certain point when they were not alone. And I get calls from some of the mothers. And again, I'm the divorced dad who the ex-wife is saying bad things about, and he doesn't watch them, and he doesn't care about them.
Right, right.
But what I'm trying to do is to develop kids that have some self-worth, that have some ability to think for themselves. And they all had cell phones. Like, I look at these people and I go, they're going to be fine.
Right.
They've all got iPhones.
Like, oh,
nobody's abducting them. Plus, here's what people really, and to this day, they misunderstand. Everybody thinks that it's more dangerous out there today than it was. I'm 62. Than when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s.
No.
It is, wait, I'm going to tell you something. It's exponentially safer.
Yeah.
If you go and look at the actual statistics.
Yeah, they're better.
Abductions are way down. I mean, there's cameras, there's phones, there's all this other kind of stuff.
Right.
But what happens is when I was a kid, and even when you were a kid, you know, you heard about the one abduction in your county that happened over the course of the last few years. But now you hear about every single one because we're all connected.
Right.
And news isn't just your local news. You see it on Facebook.
It's everywhere.
Friends who live across the country talking about a kid that was abducted. And so in our mind, it's not just bad press, it's that we hear about it more, so we think it's happening more. It's just that before, we didn't hear about all this stuff.
Right. We hear so much stuff. We're so...
so connected.
Yeah. You know, it's sad because back in the 70s, my rabbi growing up was Rabbi Norman Pates. He's since retired. He's still around. But his nephew, if you remember, was Eitan Pates, the boy that got abducted and disappeared. And they didn't know where he was for 30 or 40 years. And we lived through that, listening to it all the time. And you know, I grew up in a neighborhood where there were woods behind my house. And I would go, not with friends, I would go alone playing in the creeks. And, you know, somebody could have found me, cracked my head on a rock, and they wouldn't have found me for maybe ever. I don't know. I didn't have any way to, you know, unless somebody called somebody else's neighbor and then they screamed out the back window and said, hey, Mitch, your mom's looking for you. That was the only way you find, you know.
And now there's so much more connectivity that there's really the ability to give our kids more leeway.
Right.
But so many people give them less, and it just hurts their ability to deal in later years. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying just let your kids go. I don't want this to be misinterpreted.
No, of course not.
I'm not saying be careful. That,
right.
You know, I also, look, I talk all the time. Watch your kids. Be involved in their lives. Know who their friends are. You know, that, I mean, that. But that was true. Like, my parents, sure, they let me run out, but they knew all the parents. They would always make sure, like, I remember when I was this was a big deal in my town. When you were like in first grade, you got, or second grade maybe, you got the first chance to walk to school and not be driven by your mom,
right,
or to walk alone. And it, you know, school was 5 blocks away, and your parents would follow in their car like 2 blocks back.
Right, like, you know, stalkers.
Thinking that you didn't see them. And it wasn't to protect you. It was to make sure that you looked both ways when you crossed the street. You know, to make sure you followed the rules they taught you about.
Right.
And I agree with that stuff wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
You know, you want to teach your kids. You want to watch them. Make sure they're doing. I mean, especially today with all the tools. You know, I tell my buddies all the time with their young kids, you've got to know what these kids are posting. And it's not really just about them. It's about
everyone
that
else.
Can reach out to them.
Yeah.
You just got to know the conversations they're having and be a part of that.
Yeah. You know, my son's in college, and we talk to him on a daily basis. If a day or two goes by, we don't hear from him, we're a little concerned. When we were in college, when I was at Cornell, I was just talking to my dad the other day. I said, Dad, how often did I call you from Cornell? He goes, did you even have a phone? Do you remember?
I remembered?
He's he's 70. My dad's 76, 77. So I was just talking to him, and he goes, I remember. You used to call me from the hallway, and they did that scream thing at Cornell. Remember? I don't know if they still do it. We used to have the 11 o'clock scream where everyone would open their dorm rooms. You were 10 years ahead of me, so I don't know if they did this.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, we would all open our rooms, our dorm rooms, because we were so stressed out, and people would just scream just to get their, you know, their frustrations out. And I was on the phone in a hallway, I guess, in the dorm I was living in. And my dad says, what is that? And I said, oh, that's the 11 o'clock scream. Like, it's no big deal, I'm saying it to him. But it's funny, you don't remember that. But he does, 30 years later, he remembered that one time. But I don't even think I had a phone in my room.
Maybe you lived in the U-Hauls or something.
I lived near the U-Hauls in one of the other buildings, but it was on West Campus, yeah.
Yeah, I lived on West Campus in Baker, and I had a phone, and my mom would call to make sure I went to class.
Was Baker's the ones, like the gothic-looking buildings?
Yes.
Yeah, I lived in Baker, too, then. I lived in those buildings. I didn't live in the U-Hauls, and which have all been torn down, by the way, and rebuilt. All the freshmen live on North Campus now. No, none of them live on West Campus.
Oh, I knew it had been torn down, but I didn't know that all the freshmen lived in North
Campus.
Yeah,
it's all North Campus now. They've changed everything. So, okay, so all this stuff's great, and you got great stuff, and I've read your stuff, and I'm so glad that we connected and that you're giving me this time. Maybe you want to talk about the things that you're doing now, because you do a lot of, like, what's the word? Influencing, leader, writing. It's not just about your business. You're a thought-provoking guy.
You know, I'm a content producer. You know, I we're very fortunate now. We have platforms that allow us without being published by a magazine or somebody to share your book and get it out there. We can do this by ourselves. So
right.
I spent the last 12 years building a following on social media that allows me to have a voice.
Right.
And to publish and to speak. And because of that, one of the things I'm very involved in is content marketing. And that kind of happened as an aside to, I was the CMO of a cosmetic company. I was brought in to try to help. They had no marketing budget. It was 2008 when social platforms were just starting to scale.
Right.
And I realized how fabulous this was, that instead of just putting out ads saying buy our product, we could build content, we could have conversations, have people write about our products, and we could get reviews, and we could get just storytelling content.
Right.
So I ended up not just doing it for the brands I was working for, I did it for myself. To the point where early on,
you built your own brand, right? You built your brand,
yes,
basically.
And I came to the understanding that if a company's smart, they want their executives or the people that work for them to build their own brands. Because by building my own brand, it allows me to expand and build the brands that I work for that much more effectively for a number of reasons. Number one, it gives me reach and influence, so people are willing to listen to me. Number two is it allows me to share about my company through what I'm doing. It allows me to learn through my own experiences that then allow me to apply that learning to the companies I'm working for. So, like, I say to small business owners all the time, and by the way, I totally get being overwhelmed and not having time. I will tell you right now that when I started all of this online stuff, you know, it was right in the heart of when I was fighting to keep my girls in my life in a four-year court battle where, my time was, I had no time, but I found time.
Right.
And the other good part about it, you'll find, is that it's about you. So, you know, everyone says find you time. Well, sometimes, you know, when you're working crazy and your family's growing and other things, it's hard to find you time. But online, you can have you time almost anywhere you are.
Right.
You don't have to find your way to the gym. You don't have to go for a walk without anybody else. You can be doing it on the train. You can be doing it in between meetings. You know, when you learn, you can create some kind of, like, I have a lot of shortcuts on how to use your content in multiple places, how to repurpose it, you know, how to take what you're doing and create more out of what you have instead of making it go further rather than having to create more.
Yeah, it's hard for some people, you know.
Yeah, and but with small business owners, like I say to them all the time, I get that your business is kind of you, but build your own brand too, because you can practice. Like, you can learn. Like, I try a lot. I try everything with my own stuff before I ever do it in and around a brand. That way, I get the pushback that's against me instead of against my company.
Right.
Whichever way it goes. Or somebody says, you know, I really didn't love the way you said that. It made me feel like less than I should. Then I realize, but a lot of people were paying attention to it, so maybe now I have to evolve the way I say that. Maybe I have to say it in a different way. I use a lot of these things in my own, like I'll be driving with my business partner, we'll come up with an idea, and everything goes out of my own handles before it ever goes out of our business handle. And very often it just stays in my own handle because I don't need to put it right in the business handle because people still associate me with everything I do.
Right.
So if I'm, you know, having conversations or talking about moving the conversation from the mindset of targeting customer to matchmaking with a customer,
yeah.
I become known for that. Therefore, it becomes part of the company.
Right. Of course.
Well, I don't necessarily have to put it in there and maybe take people a little off the mark of what they're thinking. They know that the strategy and the long-term view is coming from what I post. And it gives, you know, small business owners the opportunity to build two brands, to build their company and to build themselves, because then two is more powerful than one. And it gives you two different places to express your opinions, to market yourself, to sell yourself, to do whatever it is you have to do.
Right. Okay. So let's take the average small business owner. They don't know a lot about social media. They live in a community. They may have a Facebook page. They may not even have a business Facebook page, but they have, you know, they have a page. They maybe have a LinkedIn page, maybe Twitter, Instagram. They've set these things up. They don't even know what to do with them. Well, you know, where does somebody get, like, well, how do you start? You own it. Let's say you're not a consultant or something out of your home. So you have a real store, your retail store, you're selling online. How do you start the social media marketing? I think that's the biggest problem that business owners that I deal with, because I'm not an expert on this stuff either. I do the podcast because I enjoy it. I post it up. I'm not even sure I post it correctly. You should check. And if I'm doing something wrong, tell me. And, you know, like, where do people get started? Obviously, going to your website and reading a lot of your stuff is very helpful. But what kind of advice do you have for people? Because, you know, most people who are not in your world and not people that have really learned this stuff from the beginning and make it a part of their life, they're lost, you know?
Okay, well, there's this remarkable new tool. It's called the internet.
Yeah, they just invented it, okay. Right?
Yeah, they just invented it. And there's this amazing page on the internet called Google.
Right.
And I know I'm being a little facetious here, but I'm being serious, because there's so much learning you can do by observing what others are doing.
Good point.
So what I tell people, and no matter what you do, there's somebody marketing it effectively in social media.
Right, sure.
Whether you're a lawyer, an accountant, a doctor, you run a facial clinic, you have a gym, you have an F45 franchise, you're a direct seller and you're selling
right.
One of a numerous type of things, the first thing I advise you to do is to go to Google and search.
Find somebody who's doing what you're looking to do.
Find someone that has it, like, look, Instagram, great Instagram. I mean, again, I'm not giving you the exact thing. There's a million things you can search. It costs you nothing but time.
Right.
You know, and you can refine your searches, but great Instagram pages. Retailers who do a great job on Instagram. Accounting firms that do a great job on Facebook or on LinkedIn. You know, whatever it is, or make it more generic. Accounting firms that do a great job in social media. And what you're going to – now, remember, just like, you know, in politics,
right.
You know, that you have to learn – I call it learn to discern. Some things aren't real. Some things are fake news. Some things are bad sources. You have to learn to see where you're coming from, who might have commented. Are there people that are well-known that, you know, that have said it's a good tool? You know, again, be a little bit self-aware. Don't just read something and say this is the gospel.
Right.
You know, but read multiple posts. And obviously, if you find three posts that say a certain practice is great for your industry, there's a good bet that you're on the right track.
Right. So learn and emulate. Yeah, it makes sense. You know, have you ever been at deep fakes, right? I just watched a piece of it. That stuff's scary.
And again, I'm not when I'm mentioning politics, I don't care what side you're on. You know, I tell everybody, whether they agree with me or if they not, don't post anything without checking it out first.
Yeah.
And, and both sides are guilty.
Right.
And I mean, and I'm at this point where I even know the names of the websites are on. I don't have to read the article. I know it's not real.
Right.
You know, but the same thing is true in business. You're gonna but in business it's a little bit different. it's usually the ones that are trying to sell you something that are not as legit.
Right.
Like if it, you know, if it's something where right at the bottom it says buy this course or buy this thing, you know, you want to look for something that, and you also want to look, everybody knows the names of legitimate news sources. So you don't have to, like, you might like Fox, you might watch CNN. They're not, you know, the internationalrepublic.com.
Right.
Fox might have a people that give opinions that are not fact, but when it comes to the news, they're basically reporting the news.
Right.
Again, it might be tilted in one direction. Same thing with CNN. But it's like I know that if I read something there, the odds are, again, not the opinion statement.
Right, it's a little slanted.
Five people were killed at a high school in so-and-so. God,
true.
I'm sorry I even said that.
Right.
But, you know, it's what you hear too much. I'm pretty sure if I hear it on Fox or on CNN that it actually happened.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, in news, there's, you know, there's Business Insider, there's Media Post, there's Forbes magazine, there's the New York Times. Again, when it comes to business, you know, you don't have to worry as much about the opinion side of things or whether they're Republican or Democrat or anything like that.
Right.
So you want to start finding yourself some sources. And especially if you're in an industry, the odds are you know what the names of the industry publications are.
Right.
So if you're in accounting, you know the legitimate accounting publications. If you're a lawyer, you know the legitimate legal publications. If you own car washes, you know the legitimate industry associations. If you're in direct selling, same thing. So start finding those sources. But more important, I believe, than reading the articles that teach you stuff is finding the names of the companies that they say do it well and then going and observing.
Right.
You know, I tell people all the time, watch the way I post. Watch how I write. Watch what I say. You know, like, I get controversial. The name of my blog is Straight Talk. And my Facebook page, you know, look at my middle name on there. You know, I've declared myself as a liberal, you know, and I write certain things, and I'm not afraid of being controversial, but I do my best to keep it professional.
Yeah.
To keep it not as not mean as I can, to keep it as factual as I can. And so, you know, again, you start watching what people do. So I tell people, if you want to see how to have a very engaged social presence, feel free to follow me. Feel free to see what I do. See how I reply to every tweet. I try to reply to every comment, or at the very least, like a comment. I like comments that I don't agree with, because what I'm really liking is not necessarily the comments, but the fact that somebody jumped in and shared their thinking.
Right.
And I'm rewarding them for that by giving them a like. And it's also my way of saying, I read what you wrote.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell your people to do the same thing when it comes to business. If you're a retailer, find a retailer that does a great, that you read. Oh my God. And I don't, you know, Target does a great job. Actually, recently, here's a really good current one. Walmart is doing a great job on TikTok.
TikTok now, is the new, not, right. My kids are crazy about TikTok now.
It's a new, hot, crazy thing.
Right.
I can't tell you that I'm a big lover of it for marketing, but I will tell you that some firms, and I believe in testing everything, and I jumped into TikTok because I wanted to understand it.
Yeah.
It's not really for me, but now when people talk about it, I get it. I've made videos. I've jumped in. I've engaged. So I understand it. So that's number two. Sign up for these platforms and start, like, even if you're not posting yourself, start watching what other people are doing. Learn the nuances of Instagram, of TikTok,
right,
of LinkedIn. You know, one quick thing I'll give you, because I know a lot of the articles these people, your followers, will read, is that LinkedIn is only for business, don't talk personal there. But I don't agree with that. I'm a believer that people want to know who we are as people.
Yeah,
now,
I agree.
That doesn't mean post to LinkedIn the same way you do to Facebook.
No.
That doesn't mean, but
it's a professional community, but it's still a community.
Right, but it does mean, you know, if you're going to travel to see your kids because they're real important to you, there's nothing wrong with posting that. I get more engagement on LinkedIn from senior level C-suite executives from the stuff I post about my kids than I do about marketing.
Yeah, because it hits home with them. They're people. We're all people.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, again, I'm not writing, sitting at home, watching Netflix, what are you doing? You know, I might write that on Facebook, you know, but I will write, like a post that I just wrote, you know, I'll write about the dad that doesn't quit, or I'll write about how important it is to see my kids, or I'll put a Thanksgiving post that talks about giving thanks. It doesn't not belong there, but here's the other key. You know, see what works for the people that follow you. See how you best engage with people. Figure out what content you post that people react and engage with. I like to say, that conversation is the best content.
Right.
So if you can create conversation either with you or with others, and by the way, I will sometimes let back and forth between people that follow me on Facebook or LinkedIn, even when they're arguing, I mean, I do put up guardrails. Like if they start getting nasty or right. they start getting a little bit off.
Sometimes people forget they're on a public forum when they're doing that.
You know, I'll write a comment in and say, guys, like we're done.
Yeah.
But I will let them go because that conversation that they're having is creating visibility for my post.
Sure.
And it's getting people to read it and see that I create conversations in my space. So, sorry, I have to drink something. So listen, go in, watch what people are doing, learn from what they're doing. Copy and emulate what they're doing. There's nothing wrong with copying what you see. I pick up practices all the time from someone else. When I see someone doing something, I go, wow, that's great. I got to start doing that.
Right.
Like, you know, I've been doing this now for 10 years, but, you know, I make photos with a lot of my one-liners, and I have a lot of them.
Yeah.
I create more every day. And I'll tell you, create those because if they're stuff you believe in, they become associated with you.
Right.
So, you know, and even if you write books, like I by the way, I am not a natural writer at all. I loved Twitter when it first came out because I could write only 140 characters and I was considered writing something.
Right.
You know, before Twitter, you wrote one sentence, people would say, what's wrong with you?
Right.
That's all you can write?
Yeah, now they know it's limited.
and then a mentor told me, you got to have a blog. And I'm like, oh, God, do I have to?
Right.
And it took me a long time to develop that skill of writing blog posts. But even to this day, I get paid $1,000 to write a blog post, but you can't hire me and give me a topic and say, I want you to write about this. You can give me a general area.
Right, you need
more.
I want
you to write about marketing, customer experience. But it's got to be something I'm passionate about. It's got to be something that I see somewhere else and it fires me up. And then I take a lot of that and I turn it into things like, you know, a network gives you reach, a community gives you power. Networks connect, communities care. Relationships are like muscle tissue. The more you engage them, the stronger and more valuable they become.
But that's what they're paying you for, your creativity, your mind, that they can't think of these things.
But
you look at the world a certain way.
And I take ownership. Look people in the eye digitally. I create those and for myself. I put them on photos. So the point I was making was, at one point I saw somebody taking their things, and instead of just posting them as words, they took a photo of themselves and put it on it. So 10 years ago, I started doing that. I've been doing it for 10 years. I do it all the time.
That's basically what Instagram is, right? Instagram is a photo Twitter.
Right. But
yeah.
I put like the words on the photos.
Yeah.
You know, and then I look, also go out there and test stuff. If you see somebody doing, see how it works. See if your post gets more attention with a photo or without a photo. You know, the basic intention is that photos draw attention, but it might not. You know, and it also depends on how important what you're writing is. And I'm going to tell you, this is a really important point.
Okay.
People tend to focus on the photo. I can't tell you how often I'll write a serious post about how hard it's been connecting with my daughters recently because whatever, and I'll put a picture of me and them above it, and people liking it. Oh, I love the photos of you and your daughters.
Yeah, they missed the whole thing.
They didn't even read what I wrote.
Right. They just saw the picture.
So if what you're writing is really important, number one is you might not want to put it on a photo.
Right.
Or, you know, put it with a photo. Or you might want to put it on the photo so they can't miss it.
Yeah, Ted, don't you think that kind of reflects the speed at which information passes people's eyes these days? I mean, they just thumb through things like they don't even know what they're looking at half the time.
Well, it has to do with that. It has to do with the platform you're on.
Right.
Like on Instagram, people tend to read the post less than on Facebook.
Right. Makes sense.
Because Instagram is very visual. It's all about the photos. So people will scroll through the photos very often.
Right.
And not even read what you wrote under them. But again, that doesn't mean they don't. You know, and even if someone writes, I love the picture of your kids, sometimes I've reached out to them and they'll say, yeah, I read what you wrote, but I wanted to cheer you up. I wanted you to know that I love the picture of you and your girls, or
right.
I love that you post about your girls,
yeah.
Or I love that you open yourself up and let people know, you know, the challenges you have. I think, you know, that's a, you know, all different things happen. But, you know, to circle back a little bit for small business guys trying to learn, go to Google. Look up great informational articles.
Right.
You know, read books. By the way, I lost art. I try to read from a regular physical book every single day. Now, another thing
I'm guilty of that. I listen to a lot of stuff these days.
Don't set goals for yourself that are impossible to accomplish.
Right.
So this is something I've kind of learned more recently. And you know, it came up and over the new year, and I read a great post by somebody that was talking about how to make, actually it was a podcast I listened to, that was about how to make things into habits. And I realized it was over the summer, I made this decision, my business partner's been pushing me to do it, you know, and was to read more. And so I decided, I looked up what's the average amount of pages you can read in an hour. Because I decided I could probably devote an hour a day to reading.
Okay.
So I looked up, and it says you can read about 50 pages an hour, the average person.
Right.
So I did the math, and I looked up some things on Google, and I figured that if I read an hour a day, I could read a book a week.
Okay.
And it was over the summer, and I had a little more time, and I kept up with it for about 3 weeks. And then, of course, it fell off. And then when you stop accomplishing what you want to accomplish, you let it go more and more. What I learned in this podcast about habits is that a habit doesn't have to be your end goal. You can start it with just a little bit. In other words, what I've changed my goal to is I want to read every day from a book.
Right.
And then
something that's achievable and not overwhelming and not
And when you achieve something, it encourages you to do more.
Right.
That's the way we are as humans. And then there's nothing wrong with establishing a habit, and that habit becomes I'm going to read from a book every day, and then you improve that habit. So I started with I'm going to read from a book every day, and then what I moved it to over the last few weeks is I'm going to read a chapter of a book every day.
Right.
And again, some books, you know, a chapter can take you 2 hours. But in essence, most books, because they know of people's limited attention span, you can read a chapter in well under. So
right.
I have a lot of books. And then if I get a book that's very intense and very hard reading and all of the time, you know, I'll let myself go on the chapter part. But what I'm just trying to do is to build a habit.
Yeah, no, it's good advice. I think our children are guilty of that, where they're like, Dad, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take this. I'm going to accomplish. I'm like, what's the expression I use? You can't eat an elephant in a day. You got to kind of, you know.
It goes to the same thing about working out.
Right.
Don't say I'm going to run 5 miles every day.
Every day. You're going to work out 7 days a week. You can't do that to start.
If you're not a runner,
right,
the odds of you going from 0 to 5 miles a day is incredibly unlikely.
Right.
So say
go once a week.
I'm gonna run every day.
Right.
Or I'm gonna do it once a week, or whatever
right.
it happens to be. But make it something that's achievable, and then work to improve on it. So now let's take this back to our discussion.
Yeah.
Social media. Don't say I'm gonna build this overnight, or I'm gonna do this every day, or I'm gonna do 2 hours every night after my kids go to bed. Say every day I'm gonna post something. Then move it to every day I'm gonna post something on 3 different platforms. Then every day it's going to be, I'm going to post 3 times a day, or, you know, whatever that goal is, or every day I'm going to go to somebody else's Twitter feed or Instagram feed and watch what they're posting and learn from them.
Ted, if I put something out every week, I'm doing a lot. I was in a LinkedIn group the other day. I have a friend does a lot of, he's got a podcast. He was on my podcast and he said, oh, you should be posting, I forget what he said, so many times a day. I'm like, a day? I have to, like, earn a living. I have clients I got things I got to do. And, you know, you're right. But for you to do it every day, it is a habit for you. It's probably easy. Part of it is you're not even thinking about it because you're just driven to do the content. So if I start posting once a week and then I do it every couple of days, as I develop that habit, it won't seem overwhelming. Everybody in that room, when he said you should be posting a couple times a day, I forget what the statistics he used. He was like a 5-5-5 rule, and I forget how he explained it. I mean, the person next to me looked like her eyes were going to roll up in her head. She was going to fall off her chair.
There's no rules, and here's another easy way to start. Comment on other people's stuff.
Yeah, instead of worrying about coming up with your own content.
You don't have to do it yourself.
Yeah.
You know, so here's what you need to do. Before you comment on other people's stuff, create your own, like create your Facebook page or your LinkedIn page, and make sure the information is all there. So if somebody checks you out,
right,
they're going to say, "Oh my God, this is Mitch, and he's an attorney, and he does this, and here's his phone number, and he's located in Newark, New Jersey, or whatever it is."
Right.
Make sure that, because what's going to happen is one of the beautiful things about commenting and liking other people's content is at some point they will look to see who you are.
They check you out, right. Absolutely.
And that's another way to get attention. So even if you're not creating content, you want to make sure that the stuff about you is up to date and legitimate and enough that somebody feels like you're real and might be worthwhile. And then you can also use content you already have. Again, if you're some kind of a business, the odds are you've created advertisements, you've created collateral material, you've created explanations about your business, you've sent out emails that say what you do. All of that stuff can be posted.
Right, you can all put it in. And would you say Facebook's still more like, from the business standpoint, more B2C and LinkedIn's more B2B and then the other things are for younger people. I mean, what's your opinion on all that kind of stuff?
I think it's, first of all, the easiest place to start. If you absolutely have no time at all, but you want to get involved in social media, I tell people go to Instagram. Because it's easy as point your camera, take a photo, post.
Right, just show your life in a photo. Don't even say anything.
You know, right. I mean, you don't have to write anything if you don't want to.
Right.
So, again, if you're time constrained, if you don't know, if you don't have time, it's a good place to start. But what I'm a big believer, like, look, let's take the basics. Yes, LinkedIn is better for business, okay? Facebook is more about personal, but a lot of people like to do business with people they know and like. It doesn't mean that they do
business
with
their friends. Right, they cross, they look at the lines are getting blurred, sure.
So, you know, what you really have to do is test a little bit and discover what's best for you. The odds are, if you're an accountant or you're a lawyer, your better place is LinkedIn, but then again,
probably.
A lot of accountants and lawyers get referred by your friends.
Yeah,
and
that's
true. And a lot of your friends aren't necessarily on LinkedIn. They're on
Facebook. there's community Facebook groups that we get posts all the time that saying, hey, you know, my cousin's looking for a good estate planning attorney in the area. Can you recommend?
Right.
And four moms say, oh, call Mitch. Here's his contact information.
Right, and well, the first thing they're going to do if they're already on Facebook is they're going to look up your Facebook page.
Right. Right.
And my opinion is make it accessible.
Yeah.
You know, and don't hide your picture only for people that know you. You want people to see your picture, for God's sake. I mean, it amazes me. I emceed a lot of marketing events, and I look at people who are like not even big time managers, directors, VPs.
And it's all locked down, right?
Yet, and I can't find their. I look up because when I'm speaking or I'm emceeing, I want to know the people that are speaking so I can find them to get them on stage on time.
Right.
And then I go to their page and their picture's not there, and I'm like, and I'll see them. I'll go, you know, I can't see your picture if we're not connected. And they're like, well, you know, a lot of people bother me. I'm like, really?
I mean, look, like, I understand celebrities and the people that want to just, you can follow them. That's different.
And you're not that important. And by the way, if I want to find you, I'm going to find you.
Of course you will.
It is incredibly easy. I mean, forget about it. I mean, I can't tell you. Like, I love when, you know, you meet someone and you know about them. They go, how'd you find that out? I'm like, oh, my God.
What, have you heard of the internet?
I went to Google and I put your name in.
Right.
Hello.
Look,
I don't know about you. I never meet with someone without looking at Google first.
Yeah, the way I found you was I have a friend of mine who coaches attorneys and mostly big firms, but she helps me and stuff. So we were talking, and she said, well, you should look up, you know, business people who are social media influencers for small business. And I never thought of that. Like, I should think of that myself. I'm embarrassed that I didn't. So I did a research on the top 25, whatever. You're the list a couple of times, along with other people. And they mostly had your Twitter handle, but I'm not a big Twitter person. So I went on there and, you know, you see some of the tweets and whatever. And then I said, well, you know, you must have a LinkedIn profile. So I went on LinkedIn and, you know, there you were. You had information about you. And then we connected through LinkedIn. I sometimes get LinkedIn requests, like maybe invites on Facebook too, friend requests. If I go to their feed and I don't see anybody that I know who knows who we have in common and they don't have a picture and their bio is not complete, and it doesn't say much. I'm done. Exactly.
Now here's another thing I like to tell people, because a lot of people who are not fluent in the platforms don't even know this, but my phone number and my email address is on my Facebook. Anybody in the public can find my phone number and my email address on both LinkedIn and Facebook.
Yeah, what are you hiding for?
So what I'm saying is a lot of people don't even know that. Like, they reach out and they're like, oh, my God, like, what's your phone number? Or I'm like, and I give it to them, but I go, you know, it's right on my profile.
Right.
Like, you know, you can just I'm on stage. I get, first of all, nobody calls anybody anymore because they're all afraid to talk on the phone.
Right.
So, you know, I like to, like, if you really want to stand out, and I give this advice all the time, and I'm going to give it to your audience here, and I give it on stage all over the world. I hold up my iPhone and I say, what is this? And everyone says, it's a phone. I go, you know, what kind of, it's an iPhone. I go, what's the biggest word in iPhone? And 9 out of 10 times they say, I go, no, the biggest word is phone. It's not about you.
Right.
I said, but I'm going to give you a little piece of advice. For the next 30 days, pick up your phone every day and call someone you haven't spoken to in a while. And just say, hey, this is Mitch. Is there anything I can do to support you today?
Yeah. Nobody will be doing that except you.
And if they don't answer, leave a message. First of all, you will stand out in the crowd. If they don't want to talk to you, they won't pick up.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of people will just be amazed. And, you know, my business partner does this every day when he drives to work. You know, he lives in an area where he drives, so he's not taking public transportation. And every day, he calls people.
Yeah.
All the time. And it's remarkable just the difference it makes. And I'm telling you, if you try it for 30 days, first of all, it's going to build your reputation because people are going to say, oh, my God, Mitch calls people.
Right.
You know, and, oh, did Mitch call you? What, oh, that's too bad. He called me. You know, or
– Yeah, no, that's excellent advice.
Here's another very unique thing. When the phone rings, actually pick it up.
Right.
Yes, I know that some of the phone numbers you don't know. How hard is it to hang up after you pick up and you get a recording or you get someone trying to sell you something? No big deal. But pick up.
Right.
You'd be surprised at some of the conversations you might have or some of the people you might connect with. Or you get a reputation that you'll actually pick up your phone.
Sure. Yeah. No, it's people insulate themselves. I got to imagine it's hard as for salespeople who grew up in, you know, let's say my father's been in the insurance business since 1965. And when you would get referrals from people, you would do a good job for them. You take care of their family. They would introduce you to friends and whatever. You could call them. Nobody answers their phone anymore. They're totally insulated.
Nope.
They're jaded.
A lot of people purposely leave their voicemails full.
So you can't even leave. Right.
And to me, that's just a way of saying, go fuck yourself. I don't want to hear your message.
Yeah. It's funny. I used to get referrals.
At the very least, if you're going to do that, and I get that's best for some people, at least leave a message that says, I don't check my voicemails. If you want to get me, text me.
Yeah, right, exactly. No, that's – look, there's ways to make yourself accessible. And like you said, if you're – I mean, if you're a human being and you're working and you're in commerce and you work for a company or you're a medical professional or you're a lawyer, whatever, I mean, what is everybody have so much business that they can be isolated and not talk to anybody? I don't know anybody of that nature. I go to a lot of networking events in my area. There are not a lot of attorneys there, and I know we're all struggling. None of us are making so much money that we don't need more business, but they're not going to these things, and they're not making themselves accessible. But I also think they become jaded. You get to the point where your phone rings, you know, 27 times in a day, and 22 of them are junk phone calls.
No, granted. And I'm not, by the way, you didn't hear me tell
I'm not saying you shouldn't answer your phone, but it makes you jaded.
But I'm not even saying answer your phone. I'm saying be the one that makes the call.
Right. Well, that's good advice.
You'd be surprised that the people that pick it up, or people are going to have you in their phone book.
Right, and they recognize your number. Sure.
And they're going to know that you're called. That you're very. First of all, make it easy for them. Look, there are a lot of signals you can get real quick. You know, someone gets on the phone and goes, "Oh, Mitch, how you doing, man? How are the kids?" That's someone that wants to talk. Someone that goes, "Hey, man, what's up?"
Right.
And you say, "You go, okay." Thanks for telling me. Those are signals that this person's busy or that they just don't want to talk. So,
right.
Well, hey, man, it was great hearing your voice. You know, call me if you need me. I'm here.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's nothing wrong. I say to people all the time, did I catch you at a bad time? Do you have time to talk? I mean, it's just politeness.
Right.
Sometimes people just start in. That's one of the things. Like if I'm doing work and a client calls me and I'm in the middle of doing something for another client, I won't answer. So if I'm calling somebody for some reason and they answer the phone and then they say, listen, I really can't talk right now. Can I call you back? I'm thinking, and maybe I'm wrong, but I'm thinking, well, why did you answer the phone then? You could have go to voicemail, leave a message, call me back or text me and say, I'll call you back as soon as I'm available. But you answer the phone, it's because I expect you are available to speak. Is that wrong?
Or make it clear. Sometimes, like, I'll see my business partners calling me, but I don't want them to think I'm not answering.
Right.
So I'll pick up real quick and go, buddy, I can't talk right now. Is it something that you need right away? Or can it wait?
Yeah.
Dude, call me back. You know?
Right.
And I move on. But a lot of it is about building your reputation. I like to say that a brand is what a business or a person does.
Right.
A reputation is what people remember and share.
Good.
When you build that reputation of, hey, Mitch takes my calls if I let him know, or I'll text him and say it's really important, can you pick up the phone? Or, you know, he always calls me back, even if he doesn't have time when I call. Or, you know, and what you'll find is people start speaking about you in that way, and then it affects the way other people think about you.
Yeah, you know, that's the number two complaint about attorneys, at least in New Jersey. The number one is their bill, of course. The second one is that the attorneys don't call them back enough. They don't get any response from their lawyer. And that's the thing. Can we talk about the company you're with now? Because you would talk about photos and what people are doing with photos and how it shows life, really. I was looking at the app and all the things that it does. And maybe you could tell me about where it came from and how you got involved with it. And it's called Photify, right?
Like I said earlier in the conversation, I am really what you call a content marketer. I learned a long time ago that the content created by customers, by employees, by your creative team, by people that are just talking about you and writing about you, to me is the best way to build your business and to build the reputation of your business. And back in 2009, my business partner founded a company called Collective Bias.
Okay.
I was fortunate that he tried to get me involved in the beginning, but I was divorced and he couldn't pay me any money. And you know, it's hard enough to tell your current wife that you can't pay, that you know, that you're gonna have to cut back. Try telling your ex-wife that you're not gonna be able to pay your child support.
Yeah, good luck.
Your
alimony.
That one. So I didn't join right from the beginning, but luckily he never gave up. He dragged me in kicking and screaming. I got equity, and we built a content marketing company back in the early days of what people didn't even refer to yet as influencer marketing. And we built a community of mom bloggers, 4,000 strong, that created content in what we call the storytelling format about products for brands and retailers.
Okay.
And fortunately, the company was acquired. And we just built a strong taste for how valuable content created by people other than advertising agencies is for marketing. So we evolved through that kind of space. We both learned about it. John was at Walmart before that. I was at Elf Cosmetics and then a company called Open Sky, which is where we developed our knowledge and our skills in that direction. And after we left Collective Bias, we both consulted and did a few things. We had non-competes and things like that. The company got acquired in 2016. Thank goodness. Thank you for helping us build that, John and all the other people that were there. And John had gotten on joined the board of this company called Photify, which at the time was a consumer photography app. So you took a picture, you could put like I love you on it, you could put other images, they're called overlays.
Right.
And there are a lot of apps that do that. And it's been downloaded about 12 million times, but these days most of those apps are free. So when about 2 years ago, John and I were asked. John was asked to join the company as CEO. And when John joins a company, I usually get like a note in the mail that says, "By the way, you're now CMO."
Right.
John joined it as CEO, and John's brilliance is in what we call shopper marketing. Is how do you move people from seeing a product to buying that product, and that's really the space that Collective Bias operated in. So what we've done over the last 2 years is we've turned Photify from a consumer app into more of what you call an enterprise app. It's there for businesses big and small to be able to create imagery that they can post to all different social platforms, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever it may be, that has perfectly created their logos, their one-liners, their taglines, all different types of sayings and creativity that can be overlaid on photos to easily create content. We call it beautiful branded content in under 30 seconds. So let's say, you know, you're a retail store and you want your employee, like, you know, how do you scale all the content you need if you're only like a three-store chain?
Right.
And you don't have a huge marketing budget. Or if you are a 5,000-store chain, and how much does it cost you to create local content all the time? But what if you could empower your employees to create content, and instead of having the fear of, well, they'll get the name wrong, they'll spell something wrong, their logo won't have the right colors, they'll write the tagline, but they'll write T-O instead of T-O-O. How about if you pre-created those overlays, put them into the app, and they could take a photo and then just put
choose
that
them
over the photo?
Right.
So it could say the name of your law firm. It could say what your TED line is. It could put your phone number in. If you're a real estate broker, it could put the REMAX is one of our biggest partners.
Okay.
So REMAX brokers and realtors all over the country can take a photo of a house, quickly drop in the REMAX logo in the upper right-hand corner, quickly drop up their card that has their picture on it with their phone number in the lower left-hand corner that's already pre-created in the app for them. And then make photos very quickly and publish them. They can drop in things, and there's a million, thousands of My New Home, I Love Real Estate, What a Beautiful Day, Move to Sunny Florida.
Right.
You know, whatever is about your area, once you pay for what is the enterprise app, the pro version, you can drop your own creative into it. So anybody on your team who knows how to use Photoshop or something else, or you can just use the ones that are already in the app. Like if you're part of a big company like REMAX, they're creating all of the overlays and putting them in there for all their people. If you're a small company, you know, either you probably have a creative that makes a brochure for you or a handout or your ad or something. And again, you probably have a kid in college who knows how to use Photoshop. You know, for your son or daughter can probably do it for you.
Right.
Invest in Photoshop for a few $100s, and then they can drop in your logo and other things and put it in the app. So now instead of you having to spend all this creative time or pay an advertising agency to make this credit, you can make it in 30 seconds and publish it. Like you said, how do you have the time? Well, you just walked out of the house, you took a picture, you drop your logo on it, boom. It's on. From the app, you can publish to Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, out.
So you can create your own overlays and upload them to the app.
Exactly.
Using Photoshop and other programs similar to that?
Exactly. And if you have a company and you get the enterprise or the pro version, you can save all the stuff being created by all your team members so other team members can use it.
Right. So you have you're creating your own internal community of developers.
Right.
Content developers.
In the end, like, you have to be a bigger company. Like, the bigger companies now get a dashboard where they can see who are their best content creators, which content is getting the most clicks.
Right.
You know, whose is liked the most. You know, oh my God, people like a lot better when we put the logo in the upper left-hand corner than the upper right-hand corner.
They get all the analytics.
They get all the analytics that comes along with it. So basically what Photify is an app that allows companies to scale their content creation in an affordable fashion.
In a controllable fashion.
In an affordable and a controllable fashion.
Right, because REMAX wants their stuff branded a certain way. They don't want people just screwing around with it.
And they can give people, you can give a higher level person or someone you really trust more availability. They can create their own content.
Got it.
They can move things around. Then you can have some, or you can have some pre-formulated stuff that's already created that you can give to people to share that maybe either don't want the responsibility or you're not willing to give the responsibility to.
Okay, so the real focus of Photify is on the business market, meaning working with medium to large size companies with employees, and they want to, you know, brand, you know, create a team to brand what they're doing, as opposed to the consumer side of it.
The focus of Photify is to empower what we call employee created content and community created content. That is the primary focus, but it's also a free consumer app, so anybody can download it for free.
Yeah, so I'm a solo guy. I can download the app if I want to throw things up there. I can do that. I don't need the enterprise.
You can upgrade to Pro for like $9 a month.
Right.
You know, which is nothing if you only use it once a month and you put out a photo.
Right.
I mean, obviously you'd want to do it more than that. But I'm saying you can upgrade and then you can load some of your own logos into it up to a certain degree.
Right. So if you don't have the Pro, the paid version, you can't upload everything. Just use the standard content.
And there's thousands and thousands of them, and there's also thousands of stock photos. If you don't even want to take your own photos, you can go through the stock library, and it's all searchable.
Got it. All right. Let's see. We've been doing this about 50 some odd minutes. What else is coming up for you? Going on? You got a new book coming out? Anything going on?
I'm working on a new book with my business. I've written three books.
Okay.
My business partner John Andrews. I'm writing his first one with him. It's called Retail Relevancy.
Okay.
And it's about the changing retail world. John is what you call a retail geek. He loves retail. He loves going to stores to check it out. He loves buying stuff online with new companies just to see how their process works.
Right.
That'll hopefully come out in a couple of months, but I've been saying that for about 8 months now. So you can't be sure. John's very busy running Photify, so less time to focus on getting the book out.
Right.
And for me, you know, I am I'm dedicating myself more to Fortify right now. I'm looking at some new situations. Your audience is welcome to reach out to me anytime. My email address is tedrubin@gmail.com.
Yeah, and I'll also put that in the show notes.
My phone number is 516-270-5511. I'm at Ted Rubin on most social platforms, so I'm easy to find.
And isn't your website just tedrubin.com?
I have two websites. The main one is tedrubin.com, and the secondary one is returnonrelationship.com.
Which is one of your books. Isn't that your first book?
That is my first, and basically that is the book that's the hub of everything. Everything comes out of Return on Relationship.
Got
How
it.
To Look People in the Eye Digitally was a chapter on Return on Relationship. The Age of Influence came out of that. That's kind of my main thing. And the website is mostly other people's content. So part of the concept of Return on Relationship and the website is I have a newsletter that goes out every Wednesday. And that's always somebody else's content that I serendipitously pick and share.
Yeah, so if somebody goes to your website and registers for your newsletter, I guess they'll get a notice when the book's out, and they get stuff every week to not just your stuff, but stuff you think's relevant.
They get a Sunday night newsletter that's my content, and they get a Wednesday newsletter that's somebody else that I serendipitously picked to share their content that I think's worthwhile, or I want to help them promote something, or whatever it happens to be. Return on Relationship. I'm giving them a return on their relationship with me.
Okay, and the books will list in the show notes, but they're available on Amazon or on your website, or
they're available on Amazon. Yes, sir.
Okay, are they in? Audible format? Can I listen to them?
I think two out of three are.
Okay. I'm a listener these days more than I'm a reader. I do so much work for contracts as a lawyer, contracts and wills and all the stuff I read. I find myself listening to stuff in the car. I'm just exhausted by the night to get through this stuff because there's so much good content out there. Like, I'm a podcaster, so I have my phone's getting filled up with, you can't like subscribe to a podcast, listen to all the episodes, because before you get those episodes, you're going to hear about some other podcast that you want to listen to, because there's a lot of people, like you said, there's this community of people creating content that's, it's on fire. I mean, it's out of control, the podcasting world in and of itself. But then there's, you know, audiobooks coming out all the time, and there's digital this and videos, and then I have podcasts to listen to, and they also do video versions, and then you want to watch that, and you know, interviews with people. The reason I do the interviews is because I don't have to create the content. You create the content. I interview you. We talk. I read about your background. I see all the great things you're doing. I want to share it with the 25 people I have that are subscribing to the podcast, which hopefully will grow. I did check yesterday. I'm up to like almost 1,000 downloads. We were at 600 a couple weeks ago. So
awesome.
That's pretty good. So I appreciate, you know, you'll put this out to hopefully your network, and maybe we'll pick up a few more here and there.
I'm happy to do that. Mitch, I've got to run now.
No problem. You've been spending an hour with me. I thank you very much. If I have any questions, I'll send you a link to the show to listen to it ahead of time, to go over the show notes, and we'll be all good. Let's stay in touch.
If you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at beinlaw33@gmail.com. That's beinlaw33@gmail.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur has been written, directed, and produced by Mitchell Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.